possible. If a tower went down or something.
If they haven't been able to get a hold of anyone, they'd just assume we were all snowed in, right? It's actually happened before. The getting snowed in part.
There you go. Mystery solved.
Yeah, I guess.
Do you have another theory?
No. He was right. They were snowed in. My parents assumed I was too. Jeff hadn't opened his trunk all weekend to see my bag. It was the only thing that made sense. Lisa was probably sitting up at the cabin with Avi and Morgan, angry that I had bailed on them. We'd all laugh about this when they found out the truth, that I had spent the weekend in a big, creepy library. It really was a new adventure for me. "Where else have you spent the night?" I asked. Dax was quiet, and I suddenly realized how that sounded without the benefit of my thought process. "I mean, when you don't stay at home and it's snowing out," I corrected.
"This isn't a weekly event or anything."
"I know. But I can tell it's not an uncommon occurrence either." When his silence stretched on, I said, "You're right. You better not tell me, or I might show up at your next stop." That comment won me a small smile.
"There's some churches that are left unlocked sometimes. And I've stayed at the school before."
"Our school? Really?" Dax shifted next to me, and his shoulder brushed against mine, and then stayed there. I didn't move away.
"Yes,"
he said. "Don't you ever get scared?"
"No."
"Are you scared of anything? What's the first thought that comes to your mind when I say worst fear?" He seemed to think about it. I said first thing. No thinking, just spit it out.
"Commitment."
"Like, to a girl?"
"To whatever. A girl, a cat, a class. What about you?"
He asked before I could make him explain more. "Having no control."
"Over what?"
"Boys, cats, classes." He smiled. "I don't know. Anything, I guess. Whether a teacher calls on me in class or not. Whether my mom can keep her job. It's irrational, because I have no control over it. But that's the point, I guess. I wish I did." My butt was numb from the cold, but I sat still, staring at the sticky hands on the glass, willing his to stay for just a few more minutes so this game would last longer. What was wrong with me? 36 hours, and suddenly I was craving human contact from anyone, apparently. I leaned on my right hand, breaking our connection. I could see my own breath, white puffs of air, in front of me. Another section of Dax's sticky hand detached itself from the glass.
"Looks like mine is about to fall,"
he said, standing up. "I want to win fair and square." He backed up.
"You will."
"Where are you going?" I asked as he walked away.
"Let me know who wins. I'm cold."
"You can't just leave. What if mine falls?"
"You seem like the type who would let me know that."
"I could lie." He gave a small smile as he continued to walk away.
"No, actually, you can't. Just because you're freakishly good at reading facial expressions doesn't mean I can't lie," I mumbled. But he was already gone, and I wasn't sure if he heard me. I wasn't sure why I was trying to claim I was an expert liar, or why he made me think that should be one of my goals. It wasn't. Chapter 14. It had taken at least another hour for his sticky hand to fall, followed by mine a couple of minutes later. By that time, my hands were numb, and my lungs were ice. My chin vibrated my teeth together. I grabbed both sticky hands where they had fallen down to the floor below and went back to the main library. It didn't feel much warmer.
I won.
I stuttered out to his reading form, then dropped into the nearest chair, plopping both the toy hands on the table.
"In your face."
He smiled.
"You're getting better at smack talk."
He had the sleeping bag around him. He took it off and held it out for me. When I didn't move, he got up and walked it over.
"Was it worth it?"
he asked, dropping it in my lap. "Depends on your truth."
"Oh, right. What's your question?"
He went back to his chair. What was my question? Wasn't this why I'd waited so long in that icy hall? I really wanted another truth out of him. There were so many questions I could ask. How was I supposed to narrow it down to one?
"I'm not all that interesting,"
he said when I was quiet for too long. Just a mystery, I responded, causing him to laugh. I really did like his laugh.
How so?
You're always alone. You disappear during lunch. You never talk, not even in class. And you don't seem to care what anyone thinks of you.
And here I thought you hadn't been paying attention.
You're hard to ignore. When I realized how that sounded, I added, everyone is always talking about you. My statement went from bad to worse. I stopped while I was ahead.
Right. So was there a question in there somewhere?
Where are your parents? When he flinched a little, I knew I was the most insensitive person ever. What made me think I had earned that information? Even if we were on the same team now. You don't have to tell me. I can think of another question.
My dad is physically absent, and my mom is mentally absent.
I must have looked confused because he clarified.
My dad left when I was little. My mom is a drug addict.
I'm sorry.
Don't be. Like I told you before, I am perfectly fine. I'm in a really good situation, and next year I'll be officially free of the entire system.
He had nobody. Nobody he could count on when he was in trouble. Nobody to help him if he made the wrong step or lost his way. He was all alone. My eyes burned with tears that I held back. He sighed.
Don't assign me emotions. Don't pretend to know what I'm thinking based on your experiences.
I tried to control my expression even more. I needed to take him at his word. He said he was fine. He was probably fine. I was giving him emotions based on my universe, not his. I'm sorry.
Don't be.
He picked up his book again and read. It had been hours. I was wrapped up in the sleeping bag, and my teeth still hadn't stopped chattering. I wondered if it was the lack of food. Did the body need food to warm itself? What had I been thinking staying in that cold hallway for so long? Dax didn't seem cold at all. Sitting there in his chair, reading away. Dax? My throat hurt.
Yeah.
What are the symptoms of hypothermia? Because I can no longer feel my fingers. He glanced up at me, then back down.
Go run the stairs or something.
Run the stairs? He was right. I just needed to get my blood pumping. I stood and walked towards the stairs. Stars appeared in my vision for a moment. My head light, but I maintained my balance and made it to the stairs. The hallway was dark, the sun setting. I had been in the library for another full day. Just one more full day to go, plus two nights. Why did that sound like an eternity? I started the steps slow, just walking up each one. As the feeling returned to my extremities, I picked up my pace. My mind began to wander. I missed my friends, especially Jeff. He made me laugh. Just the week before, he'd come into the yearbook room, where I was arranging the club's page on the computer. He'd sat down, took one look at the page I'd spent the last 30 minutes on, and said,
"Looks perfect. Now let's go."
"Does it really? I'm not sure if this one is very good." He had barely given it a glance.
"All your pictures are awesome. Now come with me."
He pulled me up by the arm and led me away. I need to save my work.
Someone will save it for you. You need to take me to the teacher's lounge and buy me a soda.
We're not allowed in the teacher's lounge. He stopped in front of the door leading there.
I'm not allowed in the teacher's lounge. But you can go anywhere you want, it seems. Teachers like you. With you by my side, I could do anything.
I'm not going into the teacher's lounge. He laughed and then knocked. I gasped, my heart racing. The vice principal opened the door.
Can I help you? Autumn wants a soda, he said.
No, I started through my tight throat.
Hold on a second.
She shut the door and I shot Jeff a look. Are you trying to get me in trouble?
Don't worry. No trouble here.
He had been right. She came back a minute later holding a Coke. When she shut the door again, I laughed.
See? Teachers love you.
Oh, please. You wrote the book on how to charm teachers, obviously. He smiled. My socked foot slipped on a stair, jolting me out of my memory and nearly sending me falling. I caught hold of the rail, preventing that fate. My stomach let out a large growl, and I wondered if physical activity was going to make me warmer, but hungrier. I headed to the kitchen and decided the mystery dish needed to be warmed up and attempted. The only thing I'd had that day was half of a protein bar, and that was hours ago. The microwave took me a while to decipher. I overcooked it a bit, hoping that would kill any bacteria that might have been living in the old food. I tried not to think about that as I forked a small bite into my mouth. It tasted like pasta with marinara sauce, and it was very good. I wasn't sure if that was because I hadn't eaten anything real in a while, or if it actually was good, but I took a few more bites anyway. I ate exactly half and took the rest down to Dax.
"You braved the unknown?"
he asked, accepting the dish and looking in the bowl like he wasn't sure he was willing to do the same. He sniffed at it. "Yes, it's good. Eat it." The food and the exercise had done the trick for me, and my chin had finally stopped shivering. Dax put his book to the side and took a small bite. "What do you think it is?" I asked.
"Pasta? Very overdone pasta."
"It tasted good to me. Probably because I'm hungry." He took another bite, then held out the bowl.
"You can have the rest. I don't like it."
"Really? You're a food critic now?"
"Yes, and that's disgusting."
I grabbed the pasta, and it wasn't until I ate two big bites that it occurred to me what he'd just done. Did he just pretend not to like it so I could eat it? Because this wasn't gross at all. I wasn't sure one way or the other. It didn't seem like something he'd do. But then again, he was different than I'd originally thought. "Have you ever been to that Italian place on Center Street? Gloria's or something?" I asked.
"No."
"Because you don't like Italian food?"
"It's not my favorite."
Huh. Maybe he really didn't like it. I finished off the rest and put the empty dish down. "You should work on your history project while you're here. We finished ours on Friday."
"Yeah, good idea."
I could tell that was the last thing he was going to do. I wondered how his grades in school were. He missed so much, I couldn't imagine him doing very well. "I can help you if you want."
"Sure. You get started. I'll join you in a couple hours."
I kicked his foot with a smile. Funny. I walked over to the pile of books I had thrown the first night. Some were open face down, their pages bent. I picked them up one by one, smoothing out the pages and stacking them neatly. Then I walked them over to a cart at the end of an aisle. There were several books already on the cart, waiting to be put away. Books with titles like 10 Steps to Rehabilitation, Habits of an Addict, Brain Chemistry, and Addiction. They weren't necessarily Dax's books. They could have been anyone's. But Dax had been here Friday too, obviously, waiting for the library to close. Was this the research he was doing instead of Mr. Garcia's project? "He doesn't want your pity," I reminded myself. "I'm getting ready for bed," I told him, then turned around and headed for the bathroom, where he'd started leaving all the toiletries he'd brought. I took my time getting ready, and then tucked myself into his sleeping bag. Chapter 15. I awoke to a sound I couldn't quite place at first. A clicking of sorts. It took me several disorienting minutes to realize it was Dax, 20 feet away from me, shivering in his sleep. Had he been holding back his shivering when he was awake for my sake? I tried to ignore it, knowing he wouldn't want me to do anything, but I felt guilty. I had the very thing he had brought to keep himself warm. I climbed out of the sleeping bag, unzipped it, and crawled over to him, dragging it behind me. When I reached his side, I draped half of it over him and kept the other half. He immediately woke up. Or maybe he hadn't been fully asleep to begin with.
"I'm fine,"
he muttered. "That seems to be your mantra. Just take half."
"I don't need it."
"Shut up and take it." He didn't argue, and finally stopped fighting it. He was cold. We weren't even touching, but the temperature under the bag noticeably dropped with his icy presence. He chuckled a little. "What?"
"Have you ever told anyone to shut up?"
"Nope. It's like you pull it out of me."
"How did it feel?"
he asked. "Good, actually." He laughed again, and I inched a little closer, knowing my body heat would warm him up even faster. We were quiet for several breaths. breaths that I could see like a mist above us as we both lay on our backs. We had been in the library for 2 full days, and even though I felt like we had some sort of pact, I wondered if he would acknowledge me outside this situation. Are we friends yet?
I don't have friends.
I nodded, even though I was pretty sure he couldn't see me.
But you're less annoying than I imagined you'd be.
Thanks. That was probably the closest he would ever come to giving a compliment, but I was still offended. I didn't want him to know that, so I added, "You imagined me often?" It had been a joke, but the way he went still beside me made me think that maybe there was some truth to it.
Yes, all the time.
I thought so, I said, pretending I didn't know he was being sarcastic.
Is it hard for you to think someone might not like you?
Yes, actually.
Why do you care what people think so much?
I thought about that question. Why did I care? Because I liked it when people were happy. Because I didn't like to think that someone might not like me? I don't know. I took a deep breath. I'm going to sleep now that your teeth aren't chattering anymore.
My teeth weren't chattering.
They totally were. Apparently, you do have some feelings as much as you try to deny them. He didn't say anything back, so I said, "Good night."
Night.
I inched even closer, because his body still felt cold, and tried to sleep. My mind wouldn't shut off. 5 minutes passed, then 10. The second hand on the wall clock sounded like a drumbeat. I wished I didn't care what people thought about me. Why don't you care?
What?
What people think about you.
Because I have no say in what other people do. Or think.
I guess it's hard for me to accept I don't have a little say over that. I mean, the things I do can change people's opinions.
If my mom taught me one thing, it's that you can't control anyone but yourself.
The mention of his mom brought me out of my own issues. I thought about those books sitting on the cart on the other end of the library. If he'd really given up thinking he could help her, he wouldn't have been reading those books. If he was reading those books, they might have been someone else's. Dax's mom wasn't the only drug addict in Utah. If you're in foster care with the weed basement parents, where is your mom? Getting help for her addiction so you can live with her again? He let out a breathy laugh.
She'd have to want to get better before she got help.
Can she work?
She holds odd jobs off and on.
When's the last time you saw her? He shrugged, his shoulder brushing mine. We were so close.
It's been a while.
I'm sorry. That sucks.
Could be worse.
Could be better.
It always could.
Wow, so much positivity.
Yes, you know my reputation. The poster child for optimism. It must be an only child thing.
I smiled. I'm sorry, I said again, because I didn't know what else to say.
It's life.
But it wasn't. Well, it wasn't everyone's life. I wished it weren't his. I rolled onto my side, facing him. I knew I was close, but I had anticipated that the movement would close the rest of the distance between us. I pretended like it was purposeful, and put my hand on his chest. I'm still cold, I said, hoping he'd accept my closeness if it were me suffering, and not the other way around. He did give up food for me, after all. Or so I suspected. I was glad he couldn't see my face, because he'd be able to read the truth. He rubbed my upper arm without a word, as if that action alone would warm me. I rested my cheek on his shoulder, wondering what had gotten into me. How had he made me so relaxed? How could I say whatever I was thinking to him, do whatever I was feeling? Maybe because he was the only one around, I thought with a small smile. He adjusted his position so his arm was under my head, his hand now resting on my back. My heart picked up speed. Dax didn't have any reaction to my nearness. His breathing was normal, and so was his heartbeat. I could tell, because with my ear against his chest now, it was loud. Do you know Jeff? I asked.
Your boyfriend?
He's not my boyfriend.
Yet.
He said, using the same word I had earlier. Right. Do you know him?
I thought we already established that I didn't know anyone.
I thought maybe he'd been in one of your classes before.
Why?
He asked. Just wondering.
Just reminding yourself you have a boyfriend?
He paused, then laughed.
Or were you reminding me? You're the one who came over here.
My cheeks flooded with heat. No, I wasn't, no. I just wondered what you thought of him.
Of Jeff? Why do you care what I think of him?
I don't know. I don't. Never mind. It was quiet for several minutes, and I thought maybe he was on his way to sleep when he said,
Jeff seems nice. He was in my English class last year. He was never a tool to me.
That thought made me smile. He is nice. I closed my eyes. After a few moments of silence, Dax's breathing became a steady rhythm, lifting my head slightly with every intake. I could feel myself drifting when he adjusted his left arm and his wrist came into view. 7-14-14. What does your tattoo stand for? I whispered. If he was already asleep, if he didn't hear me, I'd let it go. And I thought he hadn't heard me. Then he said,
Independence Day.
I was surprised he answered at all. I wondered if he was half asleep, his guard not fully engaged. I think you're a few days off on that.
My Independence Day. The day I let go of caring, of worrying, of everything. The day I first tasted freedom.
He made it sound like a good day, but what he described made me sad. It sounded like it was the day he realized he was alone in the world. How could that be a good day? I knew he didn't want my pity, though, so I didn't offer it. Did something happen on that day to make you realize that?
Yes,
was all he said. Freedom, huh? So when you're 18 and graduated, you want to leave here?
Yes.
Where do you want to go?
Anywhere. Knowing I can leave when I want, that nothing is holding me here, is the only thing that keeps me sane. It's why a group home would kill me.
Silence hung around us. His shivering had finally stopped. I thought about moving away now that he was warmer, but I couldn't. I won't tell anyone you were here.
Thank you,
he whispered. I smiled. He did know those words. Chapter 16. The weight of Dax's arm draped across my waist held me in place the next morning. I didn't want to move and wake him up. I was on my right side, facing away from him. He was behind me, his breath warm on the back of my neck. I tried to control the goosebumps that were forming up and down my arms. It was the first morning I'd woken up before him. It was our last full day here. In about 24 hours, someone would unlock those doors, and we'd be free. Dax stirred next to me, and I closed my eyes again so it didn't seem like I'd been lying there awake this whole time, enjoying his arm around me. At first, his hold around my waist tightened, and he took a deep breath. Then, as if he realized what he was doing, he cursed quietly and backed away. The cold air bit into my skin, a wake-up call to more than just one of my senses. I could not in any way become attached to the guy who just told me the night before he didn't form attachments. He had a tattoo on his arm branding him a loner. What made me think I would be any different to him than anyone else? I wasn't. We were just trying to make the best of a weird situation we'd been thrown into together. This was all temporary. When we were out, everything would be back to normal. I stretched and sat up. My stomach let out a long growl. I put my hand over it and laughed. He smiled, something he'd been doing more readily than he had before. Dug out the last protein bar from his bag and threw it to me. What's the first thing you're going to eat when we leave tomorrow? I asked.
Donuts.
Plural?
At least 5.
I've been missing salt, not sweets, so maybe a burger and fries.
That sounds good too.
Everything sounds good, I said, taking half the protein bar and handing back the rest. Well, except this. He ate the remaining half in one bite.
It's definitely not donuts,
he said through his mouthful. Oh, a burger, fries, and a shake. That would satisfy both cravings. He nodded. There's that burger place 2 blocks from here. We should walk straight there when the librarians unlock the door. He wadded the paper from the bar into a ball and rolled it between his palms.
We can pack up all our things.
Well, your things. Wait behind that pillar down by the parking garage, and as soon as they pass by, sneak out.
He tilted his head at me.
What?
You're going to sneak out of here when people show up?
What else am I going to do? Sit here and wait for them to find me?
Then I'd have to explain everything. They call my parents, I'd have to wait for them to show up and explain everything again.
That would take forever. I'm starving.
He laughed, a sound I still wasn't used to.
Food is definitely top priority.
Higher than the top, I said. Oh, have you ever had cronuts?
Cronuts? No.
It's a croissant and donut combined. They are the best things in the world. I'm going to buy you a cronut when we get out of here.
Oh, no.
What?
We don't have any money. How are we going to buy anything without money?
I thought for a moment. I have money at my house. It's only, like, 5 minutes from here. We'll hitchhike to my house, get money, and go eat.
Hitchhike?
Or we can borrow the phone at the gas station and have Lisa pick us up. That's what we'll do. Or we can beg for money, like hold up a sign on the street corner. That's a good idea, too.
Sounds like a plan, he said.
I stood and stretched again. We'll figure something out. We will be eating food at the earliest possible time tomorrow.
And then I'd see what price I was going to have to pay for this weekend.
I crossed my fingers that my parents just figured we were snowed in, and I had no way to get a hold of them. If for even a second they were worried, I'd have a lot of explaining to do, and I wanted to do that explaining on a full stomach. These thoughts took my mood down several notches.
I'm going to get a drink.
I waited for him to say something about how he didn't need to know my every move, but he didn't. Maybe he was used to having another person around at this point. I took a long drink of water, then went to the bathroom and brushed my teeth. My hair was a mess. My face was completely makeup-free now, and sure enough, I had a zit forming on my chin. But it didn't matter to me at all. I was relaxed around Dax. He'd become a friend. As much as he didn't want one, he now had one in me. His tough guy act wouldn't work on me anymore. I went back to the main room to see it empty. Where had he gone? I may have been in the habit of giving him my play-by-play, but he obviously wasn't yet. Maybe he was in the bathroom. His book lay abandoned on the chair. Hamlet. I picked it up and flipped it open to the page he'd left off on, and read a few lines. I'd never read Hamlet before. When I went to shut it, I saw what he'd been using for a bookmark. An envelope. Addressed, stamped, and ready to be sent. But it was obvious it had been ready for a while, its edges bent. A fold down the middle. I read who it was supposed to go to. Susanna Miller. His mom? An aunt, maybe? Who was Dax afraid to reach out to? I shut the book and placed it back on the chair, then went to the checkout desk. Why didn't the librarians have a secret food stash somewhere? I started going through the drawers behind the counter when I found a big bag of the little toys they must have used to refill Mother Goose's basket. I lifted the sealed bag and tried to see it from all angles. Maybe there was candy in there. I tucked the entire thing under my arm and went upstairs. In the break room, I turned on a movie, opened the plastic bag, and began looking through it. Dax arrived half an hour later, and I was laid out on the couch with his sleeping bag spread over me. He held up his frisbee in the launcher and shot. It hit the side of my head because I was too lazy to free my arms and stop it.
Ouch! I said with a laugh.
Sorry, I was aiming for your shoulder.
So your aim's not perfect after all.
He stood by the arm of the couch closest to my feet and waited for me to scoot over.
But I'm comfortable, I joked,
and just as I was about to sit up to give him room, he picked up my feet and sat on the cushion beneath them, letting my legs fall onto his lap. Despite my earlier declaration to myself that we were going to be friends, I was surprised by the gesture. I hadn't thought he was quite caught up with my future plans yet. Maybe he was.
What's all that?
He asked, pointing to the layer of individually wrapped toys spread across the coffee table.
Not candy. That's what it is.
Don't librarians know that kids like candy? He smiled. I reached over to the table and picked up one of the items that was not candy. It was a black bracelet made of thread. Give me your wrist.
What?
I held up my hand, and eventually he placed his in my palm. Then I tied the bracelet onto his wrist. There. Now you have a memento of our time in the library.
You expect me to wear this?
Yes. Forever. His eyes scanned the table until they stopped on something that he plucked from the pile. A bracelet like the one he wore, but hot pink. He held out his hand. Pink? No way. Find me a black one, too. He didn't move, his hand waiting there. I growled, but relented. He tied a careful knot, then turned his attention to the movie. I turned my attention back to the movie, too. Pirates of the Caribbean. A smile on my face. Johnny Depp or Orlando Bloom? I asked.
Johnny, he replied, without asking me to clarify my statement.
Yeah, me too. Johnny always plays eccentric roles, different roles, ones that help me feel like no matter what my issues, there's a place for everyone in the world. Dax's hand moved from the back of the couch to rest on top of my ankle. And in this moment, I felt like this was my place. Chapter 17. When the movie was over, I sat up and stretched. I'll be right back, I said. As I reached the door, Dax asked,
Where are you going?
I turned to see a smirk on his face. Do you really want to know?
Not at all.
I laughed and left without telling him, even though I was sure he actually was curious. I went to the kitchen and grabbed the little corner of cake from the fridge, then brought it back to the break room. I cleared away some of the toys, set the cake on the coffee table, and sat down next to him, pulling half of the sleeping bag back over our legs. The cake sat under a plastic dome that I hoped had kept it fresh for however long it had been there. Dax had found a new station on the television, and I focused on it. What are we watching now?
Some documentary on Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, right. It's Martin Luther King Day. I almost forgot.
Which is why the library is closed.
Right. We're going to miss part of school tomorrow, I said.
Tragic.
I missed my fair share of school days to anxiety, but this one felt different. You miss a lot of school. Why?
I always have a reason, he said.
That was vague and cryptic. You like those kind of answers, don't you? He bumped his knee into mine under the sleeping bag, and I wasn't sure if it was on purpose or on accident. He probably thought that was a good answer to my question. He nodded his head toward the cake.
Did you bring that in for torture, or are you planning on eating it?
Did you want cake, Dax?
Yes.
I laughed, sat forward, and attempted to pry off the cover. It was nearly impossible. Dax didn't move to help, and I sensed him silently mocking me. I'm eating this whole piece when I get the lid off.
But then you'll get a guilt headache.
I finally freed the cake, got a finger full of frosting, and smeared it across his cheek. He tried to give me a serious look, but it dissolved into a smile.
Really?
He left the frosting there as I broke the cake in half and ate my portion. It was so sweet, it made my cheeks hurt. He ate his half as well, frosting still on his face. Are you going to wipe that off? I asked.
Nope.
A stack of napkins sat on the table and I handed him one.
But then it won't bother you anymore.
You think you know me so well now, huh? Well, you don't. It doesn't bother me at all. He turned his attention to the television, acting like he didn't even feel the frosting there. I sighed and wiped it off myself. I met his stare while I did, my hand on his face, our bodies close, and my heart seemed to stop. I sat back, threw the napkin onto the coffee table, and positioned myself under the sleeping bag before I did something stupid. Well, you're nearly impossible to get to know, but you know that already. You do it on purpose, I said.
I do very little on purpose.
I find that hard to believe. His hand, which was resting on the cushion between us under the sleeping bag, brushed against mine. I had a strange urge to grab hold of it, but I fought it. His leg bumped mine again, but this time stayed, pressed against me, the pressure of it making my brain go soft. But, with very little help from you, I think I know you pretty well now, too, I said.
Oh, yeah?
The volume of the television went up, even though neither of us had touched the remote. The news had come on, and it was louder than the previous program had been.
Leading the news today, we have an update on the story we brought to you last night out of Utah County. One missing, presumed dead. One injured after the car he was driving crashed in American Fork Canyon Friday night, plunging into the river. Jeff Mattson was on his way home from a party with friends. It's unclear whether alcohol was involved in the accident.
I gasped as my picture came up on the screen.
Autumn Collins, a senior at Timpanogos High School, hasn't been found. Her belongings were pulled from Mattson's car after he was rushed to the hospital in critical condition. The river has been searched over the last several days. Authorities are worried, given the state she'd have been in after the crash and the low temperatures, that she didn't survive the accident. Search parties have been scouring the woods bordering the river. But the search was called off last night as another snowstorm pummeled the area. Mattson remains in critical condition at Primary Children's Hospital in Salt Lake.
A voice sounded by my ear.
You need to breathe. Deep breaths.
I gasped in a breath. My heart was racing, and blood rushed through my ears.
If you have any information regarding this ongoing search,
the woman on screen continued,
please call the police department.
My parents thought I was dead. Pressure built up in my chest. Pain taking over. My eyes hadn't left the television screen even though they had moved on to another story. I was frozen to the couch, incapable of knowing what to do next. I wasn't even sure I remembered how to move. That's when a loud buzzer began to sound, causing my ears to ring. The noise ripped through the room and beyond, over and over, like my alarm clock in the morning. And just like my alarm clock, I wanted it to stop. I threw my hands over my ears, wondering where the noise was coming from. Was it in my head?
Are you having a panic attack?
I heard a distant voice ask from beside me.
What do you normally do when you have one?
He was rubbing my back. My brain was too muddled to think straight. This was worse than anything I'd ever felt before. I needed fresh air. I needed to see my parents. My brother. The people who right now thought I was dead. This wasn't happening. I have to get out of here, I said, over and over and over. I couldn't stop myself from saying it.
Autumn, you need to breathe. Put your head in between your knees or something.
Why? The world around me was going black.
Autumn, look at me.
I met his eyes. They were intense and focused and more serious than I'd seen them before.
You are going to pass out if you don't slow down your breathing.
I don't pass out, I said between breaths.
Maybe you haven't before, but I'm guessing you've never had a panic attack on an empty stomach.
I couldn't get enough air into my lungs. I have to get out of here.
I know. They're coming. Someone is on their way. Hang on.
Before I could analyze what that meant, everything went black. Chapter 18.
Can you hear me? Open your eyes.
It felt like I was crawling out of a black hole, and I really didn't want to put in the effort. It would be easier to stay at the bottom and sleep, but something was itching the bridge of my nose and around my mouth, and I wanted it to stop. I tried to touch my face, but my arm was pushed back down.
Can you tell me your name? What day it is?
I opened my eyes and immediately shut them against the brightness, then attempted to blink until the sting was gone. I was in the back of an ambulance. A black woman stood over me, her hair pulled back, a smile on.
Hey, welcome back.
Autumn. It's autumn.
Actually, it's winter.
I pushed at the oxygen mask and tried to sit up. She gently forced me back down by my shoulder.
Just lie there until we get to the hospital and the doctor can check you out.
My memory was coming back to me, of what I saw on the news. My stomach hurt. I searched for Dax in the space around me, but only saw tubes hanging off the walls and plastic boxes presumably full of first aid supplies. On my other side sat a red-headed guy with a clipboard. Dax must have been able to escape when the ambulance showed up. That thought helped me relax.
I didn't want him to get in trouble, like he was sure he would if any officials were involved. I stayed lying down, but was able to pull the mask off my mouth. No. My name is Autumn. It's January something, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I don't remember the exact date. I was trapped in the library. Do you have a phone I can use to call my parents?
What's the phone number? We'll have them meet us at the hospital.
Thank you. My mom didn't normally cry, so it surprised me to see the tears in her eyes. It made me cry, too. We were crying for different reasons. She cried because her daughter was not dead. I did because I felt terrible that she'd thought I was. She held me so tight for so long that finally the doctor had to tell her that he needed to put in an IV for the dehydration. Mom, I'm fine. She took a deep breath, and I watched her bring herself under control, dab her eyes, and straighten up. I know. You'll be fine. She turned to the doctor as the nurse readied the needle beside me. When can she come home?
As soon as she drains that liter of saline, and we check her vitals again.
My mom nodded. The nurse pointed at my sweatshirt. Can you take that off, please, so I can put your IV in? I'd forgotten I was wearing Dax's sweatshirt. The thought had me looking at my feet, where I still wore his socks, up over my jeans. While my mom's back was turned, I pulled my jeans out and over the top of them. And instead of taking off the sweatshirt, like the nurse had asked, I pushed up the sleeve. I was still cold. Does that work? She nodded as she studied my left arm, searching for the perfect vein. I looked away as she brought the needle up and distracted myself by talking to my mom. Where is Dad?
On his way.
I sucked air between my teeth when the needle went in. The nurse taped it in place. Does anyone have my shoes? I asked. The nurse and doctor exchanged a look that ended with both of them shaking their heads no. We'll check out front, the nurse said. Then both she and the doctor left us alone.
They're probably still at the library, my mom said.
I doubt anyone thought to bring your shoes.
I could picture exactly where they had been, tucked under the chair next to Dax's bag. Maybe he had grabbed them when he snuck out. I'd have to ask him about that at school.
You're more concerned about your shoes than your phone? My mom asked. Impressive.
Right. My phone. I didn't want to think about that bag in the back of Jeff's car and what had become of it. But I knew I had to. Now that I had explained everything and my mom seemed to be calming down, it was time to find out about Jeff. Before I could say anything, though, my older brother Owen walked in, followed by my dad, cutting off the question on my tongue. The one about Jeff. What are you doing here? I asked Owen. What about school?
It's a holiday. Thankfully, you were presumed dead on a holiday, or I'd be missing chem lab for this.
Right. It was a holiday. And, of course, my brother would drive 6 hours from UNLV if he thought I was dead. Mom smacked his arm.
Stop being so flippant about this. This is serious. It's not serious anymore, he said, giving me a hug. I'm glad you're not dead.
Yeah, me too. He held on to me and wouldn't let go until I pushed him away with a laugh. My dad sat on the edge of my bed.
What happened?
I had to explain the whole situation again. The only thing I left out was Dax. I promised him I wouldn't tell anyone he was there, and I planned to follow through with that promise.
How are you feeling now, kid?
My dad asked. Starving. A milkshake and fries would probably cure me, I said, batting my lashes at him. He tousled my hair.
Sounds like you're fine.
I would feel better with a milkshake, too, Owen said.
I mean, my sister was dead this morning.
My dad looked up and thought.
How about this for a slogan? Milkshakes. Cure the shock of thinking a loved one is dead.
My mom rolled her eyes.
Vance, you're as bad as the kids. Come on, Owen, Dad said. Milkshakes for everyone.
They left, Owen throwing me a thumbs up over his shoulder. My mom gripped my hand so hard that my fingers were turning white. I didn't have the heart to ask her to loosen her hold. I shifted on the bed,
the stiff hospital sheets itching my skin. The doctor said I could leave once the entire bag of saline hanging next to my bed was emptied into my arm. I was guessing that would take a while, though, since it wasn't even a quarter of the way gone. "Mom," I said, not wanting to ask the question I knew I needed to. I didn't want to hear the answer. I wanted to pretend everything was fine now that I was out of the library. "How is Jeff? Have you heard anything?"
"Last I heard, still critical. I haven't checked in since yesterday. I've been involved with the search party."
"Search party?" It took me too long to remember she was referring to me. "Oh, right." Her eyes shone with held-back tears.
"I'm sorry, Mom. It's not your fault. I'm so happy you're okay."
"But Jeff..." Now tears were stinging my eyes.
"I'm sorry, honey."
"He'll be okay, right?" She patted my hand, finally softening her grip, but didn't answer my question. "Can I see him? Is he here somewhere?"
"He's in Salt Lake in intensive care. Only family can see him."
I nodded. Maybe I could send over flowers or something. Maybe I could call the hospital and they'd tell me how he was. They'd tell me he was fine. Because he was going to be fine. I stared at the clear bag full of saline until the door opened a crack and a white cup appeared. I smiled. "Look who came to visit me. Milkshake."
My mom turned in her chair. "Come in, Vance, before the doctors see what you've smuggled in here."
My dad came in, followed by my brother, who held his own milkshake.
"I will smuggle anything anywhere for my only daughter."
I took a long drink. How many days do I get the "we're just happy you're alive" parents? I need to know how long I have to take advantage of you. My mom tried to give me a serious look, but only ended up trying to gain control of her emotions again. Owen rolled his eyes and mouthed "way to go" at me behind Mom's back. "Okay, fine. I won't take advantage of you if it means you'll stop crying."
"I'm just so happy," she said.
My dad put one hand on my shoulder. "I know," I said. I knew they were relieved now, their lives righted. But for me, it felt like the real tragedy had just begun. I tried to keep my happy face in place for them. My family weren't my only hospital visitors. Before I could drain that liter of saline, Lisa, Avi, and Morgan had stopped by as well, saying they had heard the news when the day's search was called off.
"I thought you left with Jeff,"
Lisa whispered as the others talked to my parents.
"I thought for sure you had. We hadn't even started the fire when it started to snow pretty bad. We had all just gotten there and decided to head up to the cabin before we needed chains for the cars. Jeff left first."
"Why would you think I left without telling you?"
"I don't know. It was crazy. Avi was screaming about being wet. Everyone was laughing. I had been pressuring you to tell Jeff at the bonfire. I thought you left with him. And you know what I thought to myself? I thought, go Autumn. I was proud of you. And then I heard the news, and I was devastated. It was my fault you were with him."
"I wasn't with him."
"I know, but I thought you were. And it was my fault. I'm sorry."
I shook my head. "Lisa, stop. Even if I had been with him, it wouldn't have been your fault. It was an accident." I took a deep breath. "Thank goodness nobody was with him."
"I know. Only girls had jumped in his car on the way to the bonfire, and they were all continuing on to the cabin."
"But Jeff," I said.
"I know. Believe me, I know."
"Have you been to see him?"
"He's in the ICU. No visitors."
I sighed. I couldn't get worked up about him before I knew anything. Lisa's face looked how I felt, etched in worry. My face must have looked the same, because she slid next to me and wrapped her arms around my waist.
"I'm just so relieved you're okay," she said.
"I was never in danger. I was fine." She laid her head on my shoulder.
"I'm sorry I left you in the library. I'm an idiot."
I shook my head. "No, please, don't worry about that. It's my fault for drinking half a 2-liter bottle of DP. She tugged on the sleeve of my sweatshirt.
"Whose is this?"
I remembered how easy it was for Dax to read my lies, and tried to channel calm when I said,
I found it at the library.
It was so cold there. She took a big whiff of me.
It smells good. Like
Dax. It smelled like Dax.
Nan, she said, and I laughed. It smells like a guy. Like a really good-smelling guy.
I thought the same thing when I put it on. She sat up.
Were you terrified in there?
I twisted the hot pink bracelet that was still tied around my wrist. It wasn't too bad.
You'll have to tell me all about it when you get out of here.
I will. And I would. I'd tell her everything in a couple of weeks, when all of this had died down and everyone was done asking questions. When Jeff was out of intensive care and fine. When enough time had passed for Dax to see he wasn't going to get in trouble for this. Then, I'd tell her.
Chapter 19. At 6 o'clock the next morning, my eyes popped open for the 11th time since I'd closed them the night before. My mind was filling my dreams with worry. Worry about Jeff, about Dax, about my parents. My bed was too soft, too warm. The house in general felt very warm. Had my parents turned up the heat higher than normal? I climbed out of bed, my head pounding when I stood up. I needed aspirin. I was surprised when I found my mom sitting in the recliner in the living room, her laptop open on the arm of a chair, and a legal pad on her lap.
What are you doing? Did you sleep out here? I asked.
No, I couldn't sleep. I'm researching the protocol on nighttime procedures for public buildings.
Mom, you shouldn't have been locked in there.
Every room should have been searched before the last person left.
Mom, can you not do that?
She sighed.
I keep thinking that I dreamed yesterday, that I'll wake up and you'll be...
You didn't. I'm here. I'm fine.
I felt guilty once again for not pulling the fire alarm earlier. That's how we were eventually discovered, my mom had told me. The fire alarm. Dax must have pulled it. I kissed the top of my mom's head, then continued on into the kitchen.
Did Owen make it back to school okay?
Yes. He texted me at about 1 a.m.
Another thing to feel guilty about, making my brother drive 6 hours to help search for me.
What are you doing awake?
My mom asked. Couldn't sleep either. Plus, it's time to get ready for school.
You're not going to school.
It wasn't a question. I am. I feel fine, and I need to get my mind off things. Plus, I don't want to fall behind. I had been reaching for the bottle of aspirin while giving my speech and stopped myself short. If Mom saw me taking aspirin, she definitely wouldn't let me go. I grabbed my anxiety medication and a glass instead, just as she joined me in the kitchen. I could practically see her having an internal fight with herself before she finally said,
"Okay, but you come home if you start to feel sick or anxious at all."
My head throbbed to the rhythm of my heartbeat as I filled the glass with water from the fridge. "I will, Mom." I hadn't anticipated the reaction that would take place when I walked into the halls of school. It was the last thing on my mind. But I should have known. My face had been all over the news and social media. I had been presumed dead. Of course the kids at school would know. I opened the door and stepped inside, and before the door had even shut behind me, a couple of people cheered and said hi. "Hey," I answered back. A guy from my government class stepped in front of me.
"Welcome back."
"Thanks."
"Autumn,"
Cooper Black, a defensive lineman on the football team, yelled.
"You survived."
Survived? This was going to get old very fast. My friends were just as bad. Lisa, Morgan, and Avi acted like they hadn't just seen me the day before at the hospital and smashed me into a group hug.
"You came to school today. I didn't think you'd come," Lisa said.
Well, that explained their reaction. Then Dallin, Jeff's best friend, barreled into me. He lifted me over his shoulder and carried me down the hall yelling,
"She's alive! She's alive!"
His reaction confused me most of all. I thought I'd find him a mess today, since Jeff was still in critical condition. But he seemed like his normal self. During my unasked-for ride, I caught a glimpse of Dax walking down the hall. My heart jumped into my throat, and I knew he was the real reason I'd come to school today. To make sure he was okay. Just as I lifted my hand to wave, He looked away, not acknowledging me at all. By the time Dallin had carried me to the end of the hall, my head was pounding even more than it had been that morning. I hit his back. "Let me down, Dallin. Please." He did, nearly plopping me on my backside in his effort. Then he gripped me by the shoulders.
"We should have a back-from-the-dead party this weekend on your behalf. Zombie-themed or something."
I grabbed onto both his wrists. "How are you?" I asked sincerely. He smiled and dropped his hands back to his sides.
"Awesome. Ready to celebrate."
I narrowed my eyes, wondering if he was more worried about Jeff than he was letting on. "No party for me this weekend. I just want a break." He wiggled his eyebrows.
"We'll see about that."
Then he ran off, probably to start the early invites to a party I didn't want. Lisa plopped into the seat next to me in sixth period government.
"Where were you at lunch?"
"Avoiding people. And looking for Dax. Since the initial sighting that morning, I hadn't been able to find him again. Was this how he was going to play it? We were just supposed to go back to normal, like we didn't know each other at all?"
"You look tired."
"I am. I should have stayed home."
"You should just wear a sign for the next week that says, 'Touch me, and I'll put an ugly pic of you in the yearbook.'"
I smiled. "Think that'll work?"
"That's the ultimate threat, Autumn. Use your power."
I pulled my binder and a pen out of my backpack, because Mrs. Harris started writing on the whiteboard. "I want to go to the hospital today after school and talk to Jeff's parents. Take them flowers or something."
"Do you know his parents?"
"I met them at his pool party last summer. I feel like I need to do something."
"Me too. I'll come with you."
"Thank you." I was hoping she'd say that. I still wasn't sure what I would say to his parents. "You probably don't remember me, but I should have been in that car with your son. Sorry I wasn't with him when he plummeted 40 feet into a river. Those would make great icebreakers."
"They'll probably be happy to see some of his friends.
They'll tell us how he is, right?" I asked.
"I hope so."
Mrs. Harris clapped her hands twice.
"Okay, class. Get to work on these questions. Then we'll discuss."
Chapter 20. "These flowers feel too cheery, too bright," I said, unable to get out of the car even though Lisa had turned off the engine 2 minutes ago and the car was slowly transitioning to cold.
"I think that's the point. We're not going to a funeral, Autumn."
I groaned. "I know." My palms were sweating. I took several deep breaths. He was fine. Jeff was fine. I pulled on the door handle and pushed open the door. "Let's go." The lady at the information desk pointed the way to the intensive care unit waiting room, warning us that's as far as we'd make it if we weren't family. I was okay with that. Lisa grabbed my hand as we turned the last corner. I recognized Jeff's parents immediately from the summer before, both tall and handsome, like Jeff. They sat in the corner of the room, a few others I didn't recognize around them. It seemed as though their bodies and the chairs they sat in had become one, like they'd been there for years. A television was on in the corner, but nobody was watching it. My chest tightened another notch. "We shouldn't be here. I feel like I'm intruding," I whispered. "You think they'll be mad at me that I'm fine and he's..." Lisa pulled on my arm, forcing me to face her.
"You've done nothing wrong. I think they'll be happy that you care about Jeff. And you're here to check on him. You're breaking up the monotony of their day."
"You're right."
"Of course I'm right."
She walked forward, pulling me with her. Jeff's mom barely glanced at Lisa before meeting my eyes. The stem of one of the daisies in my hand snapped. I loosened my hold. She stood, her hands going to her mouth. Jeff's dad looked at her and then followed her gaze to me. He offered a shaky smile. Then Jeff's mom was weaving past chairs and people until she stood in front of me. I felt seconds away from passing out, even though I had only ever passed out the one time. I held out the flowers lamely, unable to speak. Lisa saved me.
"Mrs. Mattson, we are so sorry about Jeff and just wanted to come and say that we were thinking about him."
Even though Lisa had been the one talking,
Mrs. Matson's hazel eyes hadn't left mine, and they crinkled with a smile.
Autumn, she said.
So she did remember me.
Yes,